asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking tyrannical tipping, insurance increases, and trading all the time.
You know what, buddy? This is our Friday flight where we are going to talk about all of the top personal finance stories and how they're going to impact your money. And by the way,
my money or the listeners?
Just your money.
Just mine. Okay.
Everybody else, we just get to sit on the sidelines and watch how Joel's fortune is going to be impacted by this week's news.
That's right.
No, we are going to talk about how this applies to everybody out there who's listening. And by the way, how does it feel being back in the saddle? Because we actually, I mean, folks probably know that we record ahead of time in order to be able to take some time off. That way there are still great episodes for you there within your podcatcher, wherever it is that you listen. But this is our first episode sitting back down to the mic after we went on our little international trip over to Scotland.
Yeah.
Did you miss the mic?
Not really. I do love doing this show so much, but when you're in Scotland, in enjoying the beauty,
really
the natural
nice
landscape, you're not really, you're not thinking about podcasting all that much.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, was that your favorite part of the trip, you think?
I mean, I think when we were on the Isle of Skye.
Not recording.
No, I'm glad to be back for real.
I don't want to make it sound like that. I do not love doing this podcast with you, my friend.
No, it's great. It's great. But, and actually, interestingly enough, we recorded an episode over there that we will release shortly.
That we might release.
No, we're going to release it. It's going to be good.
Yeah. With our friend Brandon, the mad scientist. That was actually a fun little, that was maybe one of the highlights for sure of the trip, is actually going over and seeing a friend in his own town, getting to see his new home, that whole thing.
Natural habitat of old stone homes now.
Exactly. So going back to what you originally were saying, the natural beauty. So we partly chose Scotland because it's just a beautiful country. Like, we partly chose it because it was going to be easy. You go to a country where they speak English and it's a trip that you can wing a little bit more, right? You don't have to have everything planned out and have all the details figured out. So that was attractive. But also, we knew that Scotland is a beautiful country, and we partly planned it because of all the hiking. And like you said the Isle of Skye, which has some incredible hiking, and it did not disappoint. And what stands out about that is the fact that it was also totally free to be able to do that. Obviously,
I think it was, what, £5 for the car park, and then hiking was free and off the chain.
It was unreal. Like, literally maybe some of my favorite hikes of all time. And actually, we've still got some dribbles and drabs of our adventure up on Instagram if you go to How to Money Pod, and you can see some of what we were up to if you want to check that out. But it was a fun time for us to be able to spend time not only just with each other, you and me, but with our wives as well. That was not something that we've been able to do for a minute.
It was huge. It's huge. And it's funny, we don't really like relax on our vacations. We're like constantly going and seeing and doing, and part of me is like, when am I gonna like take a chill pill or something on a vacation, but I just never do it. I can't do it. There's too much to explore when you go to a new country like that. I can't like sleep in till 9, even though I've got like, it's the only time I could possibly do it because we have kids.
It's a little bit different than just going to the beach.
Yes.
Like if you truly want to relax, yeah, right, you go to the beach without your kids.
But I love
that would be amazing.
Yes. But I love vacations like this because there's just so much exploration. I'm a little tired at the end of it,
yeah.
But it's so worth it because of all the experiences we were able to have. So
totally agree.
All right. Well, yeah, we're back and glad to be back podcasting, glad to be talking about the money stories this week that impacted your finances. And so, Matt, let's get into that. Let's talk about tipping first and foremost, because I'm not going to lie, it's gone too far. It has gone beyond the realm of reason. Self-checkout kiosks, by the way, are apparently asking for tips at airports and stadiums. I didn't notice this at the airport, asking for a tip at a self-checkout kiosk, but apparently this is happening all over the place, and it's happening more and more, according to the Wall Street Journal. There's zero human interaction when you buy something, but then the kiosk says, "Oh, would you like to leave a 20% tip?" And you're like, "Wait,
that's a problem.
I'm not tipping a human. I didn't even see a human." And then Bloomberg, on the same note, they report that a unionized Apple store in Maryland wants to add tipping as a screen option at checkout. So if you're getting a new MacBook, an iPhone, or AirPods, you're going to be asked if you want to tip 3 or 5% on that purchase. And it just seems like tipping has jumped the shark at this point. Like, you know, you and I, we just came back from the UK. It was a breath of fresh air to kind of just be charged normal prices and not have to think about tipping. That's not how we operate here in the good old US of A, sadly. But to see tipping creeping into all of these other areas where it didn't used to be normal, it didn't used to be the case, I think it leaves a lot of people scratching their heads about how they should react.
Well, so, okay, I've got two thoughts on this, I guess. Like, in the one case, like you're talking about, where there's zero actual human interaction, there's no freaking way that I'm going to tip in that scenario. Like, I totally get that.
And you have no idea where the money's going. I mean, some of these companies say, oh, yeah, the money, I promise, goes to the workers' pockets. But
even still, I don't care. Like, if there's not somebody who is actually, like working with me as an individual, there's no way I'm going to tip. But when it comes to like the Apple Store, so in the journal, they didn't specify whether or not it was only going to be on like charges at the Genius Bar or on physical items that you like. Were you to just walk in and, like you said, like buy a laptop? Is there going to be a tip screen? Because that's dumb. Like, there's no, like, there's no way that I think that there's an argument for that. But when it comes to a service being provided, I think there is a decent argument when it comes to the ability to reward somebody who is serving you and doing a good job, answering all your questions, like making you laugh a little bit, making your day a little less miserable when you know that you had to go in to have your phone looked at or something like that. And so in those instances, I think that it kind of makes sense. Like, there could be an argument for leaving a tip for that individual.
Because, I see that.
Because like when you work with when our wives get their hair done, they're spending a lot of one-on-one time with that professional, right? Or like when you go to get a massage, like you're always going to tip because it's like an individual who's working with you. And so I guess in that way, I'm like, all right, if there's somebody who is working with you, if there's like a human presence, then I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe this wasn't as traditional, but I'm also okay with things evolving over time as, you know, more folks are being compensated by the service that they're able to provide.
Yeah, I guess it just makes it so much cleaner when people get paid what they should get paid to do the service they're providing.
Sure.
And then we don't have to really consider that. We just have to know the price on the board and then not feel guilt tripped.
I like the black and whiteness of that.
Yeah.
I love, well, and that's what's so crazy is like we didn't see a tip line anywhere until we went to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Where at an in-town coffee shop, that was an amazing coffee shop, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, was it Artisan Roasters or something like that? But that was the first time we'd seen a tip screen anywhere, like during that entire trip. And he almost looked because I mentioned it and I was totally nice about it, was kind and friendly, but I mentioned it because I was curious. I was like, hey, this is actually the first time I've seen a tip line anywhere during this entire trip. And he almost looked a little like embarrassed by it. He's just like, yeah, well, they're, you know, they're more in the city, some different stores are starting to do it. I was like, oh no, I think it's totally fine. I don't want to like necessarily like upend the tradition of not tipping in other countries by actually participating in it, but they were just so nice there, did a good job, so I was more than happy for us to leave it a little
and
tip.
Obviously, tipping is always just like a weird thing to talk about when it comes to money, and I feel like it's only becoming a weirder topic as we're being asked to tip in more and more places, and so we just have to kind of draw our own boundaries, and I think we want How to Money listeners and you and I, we want to be generous in the situations where we feel compelled to tip, where it makes sense, and in the other, and definitely exactly. Don't go out to eat and then stiff your awesome server and not tip them enough. That's not cool.
That's not what we're saying to do.
Not at all. But at the same time, you have to kind of weigh when you tip, and you kind of have to have a game plan ahead of time going into it saying, listen, if it's some random robot, I know I'm not going to tip. Don't feel guilted into tipping in that.
I'm not going to tip the software. Right. Like, I'm not willing to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's something I think we just want you to think about ahead of time as tipping creeps its tentacles further and further into our lives.
Couldn't agree more. It's all about being proactive and intentional with your money.
All right, let's talk about investing for a second. Day trading is something that you and I, of course, are not in favor of, but it is happening more and more. And of course, during COVID, it felt like everybody was, meme stocks to the moon and downloading the Robinhood app, and Robinhood was taking off, and that was like all anybody could talk about. But Robinhood has since fallen out of the headlines. Nobody's really talking about Robinhood anymore until today, because Robinhood just announced yesterday that they're going to be letting customers trade a basket of stocks and ETFs 24 hours a day, 5 days a week. Why not the weekend? My guess is it's coming soon, right?
It probably will be 24/7 very soon.
Inevitable, basically. But Robinhood makes money when people trade stocks, and people are doing less stock trading as normal life has mostly resumed. And so I think this is their goal is to say, hey, you can trade now into the evening and maybe people will trade more, making Robinhood more money. But just because you have the ability to trade at 2 a.m., that doesn't make it a smart decision. Like my mom always said to me, Matt, she said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And I think that's wise words from Cheryl. And in this case, you definitely shouldn't. Like if you're a Robinhood user, or even if you're not and you see this and you're like, oh man, I can trade 24 hours a day? That's awesome. Well, no, it's not. Just because it's available doesn't mean you should be taking advantage.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's actually a good thing that the stock market isn't open 24/7, because it actually provides like a break for folks to kind of reevaluate their life decisions. Like, do I actually want to dump all of this money into this stock just because I saw a tweet or just because a headline? But as long-term investors, since we're not trading based on the current news or the different market gyrations anyway, the fact that the stock market isn't open all the time, like, it actually has zero downside to us. It shouldn't change the fact that you should be buying investments, making trades for years, not based on minutes or
sure.
hours.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. We don't want to just dump all over Robinhood, because they're certainly not all bad. In fact, we've talked about this as well. They're the only brokerage that offers a match on IRA contributions. That's pretty sneaking cool. But in this case, our reaction is a little more like womp womp to this announcement, because we see it more as a temptation for novice investors out there rather than a win for everyone else. They're incentivizing this speculative trading. And instead, we want to see folks attacking how it is that they approach their investing with more of that long-term mindset, right?
Yeah.
Low cost, widely diversified index funds where you are purchasing it for years and even decades, not based on the whims of Twitter and based on the different headlines that might be coming out.
Preferably investing more and investing more regularly and not trading more often. That would be kind of the recipe to building financial success for yourself. And taking the boring route, like, it doesn't matter. The bells and whistles on that app, I think, are kind of cool, but it's also overkill for people like us who are long-term investors. And I think it can lead to just bad behavior on our part. It's not necessarily Robinhood's fault. It's just the incentives of the app that they've built, though, and kind of what that can create for us and kind of what it can stir up inside of us as we kind of get more interested in growing our wealth. All right, let's talk about college for a second, Matt. The college degree continues to become less valuable. It's certainly not that college is a bad choice for all people or even for most people. Like, I think the college degree still has value for a decent chunk of society. But the value proposition just isn't what it used to be. And so that's what you and I continue to tackle and continue to mention, because it just takes more thought before you proceed to go get a higher degree than it did in years past. And so states around the country like Pennsylvania, Utah, Massachusetts, and Alaska have eliminated the degree requirement for a slew of government jobs. I think this is great news, because when you require a degree for a job that doesn't necessarily really need one, you lose out on a potentially excellent pool of candidates that otherwise would have been excluded from even applying, right? And so there was a Harvard business study from a few years ago, and it found that about 60% of folks with the right experience for a job were rejected out of hand just because they lacked a degree. And that same study found that millions of job postings requiring a degree were for positions currently held by someone who didn't have one. So there's just it's not that a college degree
unnecessarily raising the bar.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And so it's why? And I like seeing that more and more employers and governments are being thoughtful about whether or not the job requires a degree or should require a degree, especially as the cost of college rises. We all have to be more conscientious about pointing people in that direction because, yeah, it can pay off, but so much depends on the economic decisions involved with going to college and getting that degree.
Yes, it's not that slam dunk decision that it once was. And what you literally asked a question, you're like, why? Like, why are employers doing this? And like, essentially what this is a shortcut. It's an easy way for employers to potentially assess whether or not a candidate, a potential hire, is going to be quality or not, right? But the problem is that it's an imperfect assessment.
Yes.
And I think what this means is that, like, and this could be a total win for businesses as well, and hopefully they'll realize that this is in their best interest, because college graduates, they demand a higher salary, in part because of the fact that they've dropped so much money on a higher education. Yeah. They can command more in the marketplace.
They're like, I'm going to need at least $620 more a month because that's how much my student loan payment is.
At the very least. And so hopefully employers will even see that this is in their own best interest, because they can get potentially hires, new employees that are just as qualified and who can do just as good of a job, but they'll end up paying them less. I think what this means, though, is that they're going to have to spend more time and more money on actual hiring, on figuring out whether or not somebody is going to be good for their company, right? Like whether or not they've got the social skills, whether or not they can work with other employees, on a team. And so maybe this just means that you should look into a career in human resources, right? Because this is something that AI won't be able to figure out, because AI is like good at looking at a resume and looking for certain attributes and whatnot. But like, you can, by talking to somebody, figure out, and actually interviewing them, figure out whether or not they're going to be a good hire.
Yeah.
And oftentimes that's something I think that employers are overlooking. You're missing out on a lot of great folks out there who could most definitely provide a lot of great value.
Yeah. And of course, I want my doctor, my surgeon, my lawyer,
Oh, yeah.
to have a college degree, and in fact, an advanced degree.
Not just good people's
not just be a cool dude or do that. But
bedside manner does help, for sure,
right?
When it comes to this kind of position.
Yeah, and there's just so many jobs out there where it's nice to have skills, but the college degree isn't necessarily like massively important.
Totally.
And so eliminating that requirement, I think, is going to be a boon for the workforce, and I think it's going to be helpful to a lot of employers, too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and so we're actually not the only ones who are losing a bit of confidence in the value of a college degree. A recent journal poll noted that there are some major shifts in the public perception of college, because back in 2013, 40% of folks thought that a college degree was unlikely to be worth it. But 10 years later, this year in 2023, 56% of people feel that way. That's a pretty big increase on the negative perception of college.
Yeah.
But even still, college costs can continue to rise, especially at the Ivy Leagues, at the elite institutions. No wonder folks are looking for alternative paths, including apprenticeships. You know, not just for like the blue collar trade work, but even for white collar jobs as well. We love seeing fewer degree requirements from employers. But for those folks out there considering the trade-offs of higher education for themselves or even for their kids, it is becoming more important than ever to weigh the financial trade-offs. An apprenticeship might be worth it. And if you want to extract more value, you got to find different ways to keep the cost of education low. That journal article, they mentioned that there just isn't great information out there as to the value that an apprenticeship can provide you. They were talking about how, you know who's good at recruiting? High school grads, colleges, and the military. Like, they're the ones out there who are communicating the different benefits out there. But there's a lot of different industries and specific companies that are able to provide not only a good salary and a good living that you can make, but also education that can accompany that apprenticeship as well. So keep that in mind. That's just a great way to avoid some of those unnecessary costs of higher education.
I know some people have gotten onto us for how we talk about college, and you and I are both college graduates, and we're not trying to cut it out at the knees, but man, clearly there is a certain amount of revolt against higher education given the value proposition. I think the education isn't as what it used to be, and the price has certainly gone up quite a bit. And so the individual consumers need to consider how much they're paying and how much they're going to get out of that education. Makes me think about our conversation with Ann Garcia not too long ago, and just about there are a lot of ways to massively reduce the cost of getting that degree. And if you take the approach that she was recommending, I think you can cut down the cost massively, which there therefore increases the likelihood that getting that higher education makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. And like, yeah, going back to what you're saying, we're not against a liberal arts education, but the fact is that's just not always available to a lot of folks. Yeah. There are a lot of families out there. There's a lot of young adults who can't afford 4 years of not working a full-time job where they're looking to help support their family or to get ahead financially.
Yeah. And some people do it both at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. They're working and going back, going to school, and more power to you people who are like busting your butts to make it happen. Just be careful, right, when you're out there. And one thing we have recommended, Matt, a lot is that a community college can make sense for some individuals as a way to lower the cost of a higher education, allowing you to get more value out of it. But it's also crucial to make sure, if you're going to go that direction, that the classes you're going to be taking from your local community college are not only going to help you get into the college you ultimately want to graduate from, if you're not looking to graduate from that community college, but also that those classes are going to transfer. And the Associated Press had an article this week about how students transferring from a community college to a traditional four-year university, they're losing credits in the process, which is just so frustrating. But it's not just frustrating. It's also massively expensive.
They called it a leaky pipeline, which was like a great way to describe it.
Yeah. And so there are a couple of different states who are trying to create some standardization across how classes and credits transfer, like Massachusetts and California, to help ensure like fewer losses of credits and courses that people have worked so painstakingly hard to complete. But it's just really important to note, like, that is not standardized in most states. And if you're planning on transferring out of that community college to another university, it's smart to ask, like, talk to the registrar's office, right? Ask about whether the classes you're going to take are going to translate into credits, basically, with your new school before you go through the process of taking them in hopes that they're all going to transfer. I transferred, Matt, after year two, and I was able to even, there was one or two classes that they said weren't going to transfer, and I was able to petition to get those classes to count. And so I know there's a process at most schools for that too, but man, it's a pain. And I remember being like disheartened that a couple of those classes weren't going to transfer.
They didn't count.
I think one did not, and one I was able to get to count. But it's frustrating when you take it elsewhere. I was going from a different state even, but that's a frustrating thing to not only have to redo the work, but have to pay again to take that class in order to get your degree.
Yeah, so definitely reach out to an advisor there at your community college. But if you do have a state university in mind, reach out to that specific school and to figure out what classes are going to specifically be able to transfer over. And we will link back to that conversation that we had with Ann Garcia in the show notes as well. But we've got several additional stories that we're going to get to. A boost in credit scores that might be coming to a score near you. We're going to talk about the rising costs of insurance, specifically car insurance. We'll get to those stories plus others right after this.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So, if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. They are committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional.
They offer financial planning and services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances and are customized for your needs. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more.
That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org. I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. All right, we're back. It's still the Friday flight, and we're still talking about the money stories that happened this week and how they pertain to your personal finances, the most interesting, the most pertinent ones. And Matt, of course, we always got to get to our ludicrous headline of the week.
That's one of our recurring segments.
It happens every Friday.
Yeah, we're never going
to
cut it.
That's right.
Well, maybe we will.
Much to your chagrin. It sticks around. Well, this week it comes from a Gallup poll, and the title of it read, "About half in the U.S. worry about their money safety in banks." And the stats are showing fear increasing for everyday Americans about the safety of their money in their bank accounts, Matthew. Only 20% of people that were surveyed checked not worried at all. Like, those people are super chill, and I like them. But and yes, it is true. Another bank bit the dust just last week, First Republic. And we've had three bank failures in total so far this year that have gotten a whole lot of press. And we might see more regional banks fail in the coming months. But does that mean you should be worried? Does this mean you should take some sort of action based on worry? No, first, you shouldn't be worried because, you know, unless you're someone who has more than $250,000 in a single FDIC-insured institution, yes, you might want to move some of that money elsewhere to another FDIC-insured bank so that you're able to get full coverage on all of your dollars. But other than that, there is no need to fear, even though this is just obviously, Matt, a real fear that a lot of people have, that their cash could be stripped away from them. FDIC insurance is a protection I think people should trust. Not one single FDIC insured dollar has ever been lost before. Your money is safe. I want people to be more in that 20% camp where they say, nah, I'm not worried at all. I'm not freaking out about it. Because I think when you know the reality of how FDIC insurance works and how it does protect your money in the case of a bank failure, you really don't have any reason to fear, and there's no need to move your money from one of the great online banks to one of the crummy giant banks because you think, oh, this bank might go bust. Well, even if it does, you're okay.
Sure. It could happen, but it is highly unlikely to happen. We're not going to come out here and try to fear monger. Speaking of fear mongering, we talked about unemployment and layoffs happening last week. And I feel like we heard from a lot of folks who are just like, guys, well, a little heavy on the title, and yes, maybe we could have called it something a little bit different. But fact is, like, the landscape is shifting when it comes to the number of layoffs that are happening and what the job market looks like. We don't want folks to be putting their head in the sand. Unemployment, it is still near record lows, but we are seeing some signs of economic tightening in some areas. Now, we've heard anecdotes from some folks that their employers, that they're suspending, you know, the different benefits that they're offering for 401k matching. It sucks to lose that perk. Hiring freezes, they are happening with greater regularity as well. Something else that just came down the pike, Microsoft, they announced a pay freeze for this year in an effort to quote unquote navigate economic uncertainty. But other data out there shows that changing jobs, that it's not coming with as much of a pay raise as it has in recent years. And so we wanted just to mention that because, yes, is everybody going to get laid off? Like, I mean, that's not what we were communicating last week. We totally hear
some of the tidal wave of layoffs.
Because there's a lot of them happening.
Because
for sure.
There's more and more happening.
There are more folks I know who are getting laid off.
Yes.
The scene is changing. And will the economy slow significantly? We're not totally sure. But it is a good idea to shore up your finances now. And just to make sure that you've got adequate savings on hand. It's important to do that from a financial standpoint. But it's also important to do that from a professional standpoint as well. And that's what we talked about about during that episode. We'll link to that one, but you can listen back when we talked about the steps that you can take now to ensure that you are A, doing an excellent job, and B, that you're not going to be the first one on the chopping block.
Yeah, making sure you can't make yourself, like we talked about in that episode, layoff proof, but you can make yourself layoff resistant.
Totally.
And at least you can increase your financial defenses, right, at the same
financially
time.
Financially resilient.
Yeah, making yourself, no matter what happens with your career or your day job, making yourself, giving yourself more ability to withstand different storms might come along, or with, whether it's reduced hours, whether it's no pay raise if you work at Microsoft for a year, that kind of thing can smart if you're kind of basing your your spending on kind of future pay increases, which you shouldn't count your chickens before they hatch. But that's a lot of people do that, Matt, and that is a tough pill to swallow, being told by your employer that, hey, guess what, no pay increase for you this year. But those are the kind of things that we have to be prepared for, especially, by the way, in a time of rising inflation, everything costing more, and then for your employer to say you don't get a pay bump is really can be really dispiriting, can be really hard. But that's the kind of thing that what we were talking about really last week when we were kind of pointing to how you can prepare yourself for potential difficulty in the economy. All right, let's talk about insurance for a second, Matt, because insurance rates are going up again. The biggest car insurance companies are stating that repair expenses are increasing quite a bit, which means they're going to have to pass on the increased costs of repair bills to their customers. And how do many listeners, if you have gone to the mechanic lately, you know that these insurance companies are not making it up. It costs more to get a car repaired these days. But still, Allstate has been hiking rates on a quarterly basis in most states in the high single digits. So every quarter, upping rates by 8 or 9%, which means car insurance is getting more expensive quickly. Progressive has literally said, Matt, this is the words that came out of their mouth, that they plan to be aggressive with raising rates. And so basically, the insurance line item in all of our budgets has either already gone up or will very soon. And it's something that How to Money listeners need to be careful. They need to watch out for, because that can be a budget buster, especially given kind of the numbers that are involved with insurance. We could be talking a few hundred dollars a year in one fell swoop that was just kind of unplanned for.
Yeah, and this is especially disheartening when you consider the fact that the big insurers had massive profits a couple years ago, back when very few folks were driving and everybody was locked down and folks were working from home. And they saw huge increases in profitability. You would have thought that they would have socked some of that away for a little insurance company rainy day fund, right? Rather than immediately being like, oh no, we're not as profitable as we once were, and so now we're going to stick it to you, our customers. And so shopping around, like, it's always been a money saving proposition. But when prices are a little more stagnant, shopping around is unlikely to save you as much as you could in an environment like we're currently seeing, you know, when we're seeing rates skyrocketing, sometimes 12% or more in a single quarter. So yeah, shop around, get quotes from other insurance companies. Even reach out to, if you don't know of an independent broker to help you shop your policy around, you can find one. Just head to trustedchoice.com. That's a great site to find somebody who isn't going to work for a specific insurance company, but they are looking to find the best product for you.
Yeah, it's smart on multiple levels, but I just love how simple it can be to have one person who can check rates with a bunch of different companies at one time for you.
And they know what to look for, yeah. So, but on top of that, consider increasing your deductible if you have the cash on hand in order to self-insure, in order to handle some of those expenses that might come along, and where you might be tempted to make a claim, but instead you're thinking, you know what, we're just gonna bite the bullet on this one, we're gonna take care of this ourselves. Or you think, you know what, that little ding in that back right rear panel, I don't even care.
Yeah, I'm gonna let it be.
Just let it be. It's character. This might even be the final straw when it comes to ditching an extra vehicle that you've got on hand, and you've been like, oh, insurance rates have, you know, they've never been all that expensive. Well, check again, because maybe they are, and you can unload that thing.
Yeah, you might be thrilled to have that second paid off car in your life, but if it's costing you a whole bunch more every month or every 6 months, however often you pay your insurance. By the way, that's another way to save on insurance, is by paying it in 6 month or year long increments. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes they'll give you a discount for that. But shopping around really is the key to saving money as prices go up. All right, let's talk about another kind of insurance, Matt. Since we're talking about that, let's talk about life insurance. There's a new finding from research firm LIMRA, and it finds that just 52% of American adults have life insurance. That's down more than 10% over the past decade, which is not good news, because, you know, life insurance is a necessity, I would say, for a significant portion of the How to Money audience. If you have people in your life who rely on your income, you know, getting life insurance is super important because it ensures they're going to be taken care of if you die prematurely. And this is not an effort to launch a guilt trip. It's just an effort to make you aware of just how important of a financial decision getting life insurance actually is, to see declining rates of people who are insured with some sort of life insurance product. Matt, just makes me think that there's a lot of people who are leaving their loved ones financially exposed in the case of a devastating tragic event.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, when we're talking about life insurance, we're always pushing folks to look at term life insurance specifically, not any sort of variable universal life products that exist out there. But a level term policy is the cheapest product on the market. So that's good news for all of us out there. But it's also the one that makes the most sense because you typically only need coverage for a specific length of time. Like imagine 30 years, like during your working career while you are earning an income. That is the period that you need to actually insure for. But for our listeners, when it comes to the type of policies that we're talking about, like you could be talking about just paying something like 12 to 20 bucks a month in premium costs for something like a $500,000 policy. So this is a very affordable thing, and you should most definitely have a policy like this in place. Again, if you have either kids or a spouse, a partner, somebody who's counting on your income.
It's similar in how inexpensive and how important it is to like renter's insurance, right? Because it's so cheap to get renter's insurance, yet so many people don't do it. But what if something happened to your apartment or to the home that you're staying in and all of your possessions went up in flames?
That's right.
A big deal to replace those things. And it's, it's pennies a month, really. I mean, it's dollars a month, right?
It's still literally dollars, but relative to how much you're insured, and the risk that you're able to mitigate, it is well worth it. And by the way, if you're thinking, oh, I've got insurance, I've got life insurance through my work, it's something that they offer. Well, it's probably not enough because you should only consider it. You should only be viewing that as an added bonus because it's not likely going to be enough to actually replace your income for anybody who might be counting on you. But 10 times your annual income, that's actually a much better rule of thumb. And we actually have an article up on the site that we'll link to that talks about how it is that you should be approaching life insurance.
Yeah, for sure. All right, one last thing, Matt. Some good news for anyone with a small bit of medical debt lingering around. It no longer negatively impacts your credit, thanks to the generosity of the three major credit bureaus. Medical debt of less than $500 is being automatically removed from all credit reports, which is likely going to lead to millions of folks seeing a bump in their score because, and I didn't realize this, but apparently 70% of medical debt on credit reports is now gone. Like that's the vast majority of credit debt is those smaller amounts, which is great to see that being removed and it's no longer dinging people in a massive way. And so, the credit bureaus, they also increase the time it takes for unpaid medical collection debt to appear on a report from 6 months to 1 year. So you have like more time to work out a payment method with the hospital, hopefully, or more time to talk with the debt collector and figure out a solution before it gets reported on your credit report. So I think that's all good news.
It's all good news. It's good news for your credit score, but it's important to keep in mind, this doesn't erase the debt that you owe.
Yeah.
And so even though your score is now potentially higher, that doesn't give you permission to go out. Like you shouldn't see that as a free ticket, like a ticket to ride. Like you're going out there and potentially maybe getting a fatter mortgage than what you previously could have afforded. It doesn't change the actual your actual financial situation, even if your score changes. It's sort of like if you're driving on the road and the speedometer readout like drops 20 miles per hour and you're like, oh sweet, I'm only going 40 rather than 60. Well, it doesn't change the reality that you're still going 60 miles per hour. So like, don't immediately like mash the pedal and take it back up to 60. Some of this is going to depend, I think, on specific lenders and how it is that they're underwriting the loans, but it also depends on us. And we should also be personally responsible for our own financial situation as well.
It's like what we talked about with Marshall Allen too. There's lots of ways, which we should post that link in the show notes as well. If you have some sort of unpaid medical debt and you're trying to figure out what to do, how to resolve it, well, you might've been overbilled for a procedure or, you know, there are ways to go about negotiating that with your medical provider instead of just saying, oh, I can't pay it and letting it go into collections. So that's something people people should know on the front end when they're kind of, when they get a bill in the mail, don't just kind of like put it out of sight, out of mind, just because it's not going to go on your credit report.
That's right. We want you to be proactive. We want you to be intentional with your money, whether you are, whether it comes to how it is you tip or whether we're talking about paying your medical bills. But Joel, we've got a few notes of housekeeping before we wrap up our Friday flight. We've got some newsletter referral shout outs here. And Nathan G, Miss Anonymous, and Jorge S, George for all the English speakers out there. But they all refer the newsletter to several other friends. So a massive thank you for spreading the good word, spreading the good how to money word to everyone else out there who might need some of that additional personal finance knowledge in their inbox, showing up every Monday. Every Tuesday morning. I don't know why I said Monday morning. Every Tuesday morning, if you have not yet signed up for the newsletter, just head to howtomoney.com/newsletter. It's fun, helpful, and informative as well.
All the above. It's great.
All the things.
All right. That's going to do it for this Friday flight. Happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day to our wives and our moms.
Well, yeah. We have to celebrate our moms, Joel. It's up to our kids, right? It's their job to to celebrate our wives.
If that's what you think, you're in big trouble.
It's not going to fly.
Come Sunday.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this one. Until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.